Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Annie Rose, what's going on?
Hey, Tina, not much.
Well, here we are remotely recording a podcast, which you and I have done on your show a couple of times. I usually prefer to record in person whenever possible, but it's October, it's spooky season, and in 2020, I think I'm just accepting that I need to have a remote recording set up because that is the way to do it if you care about public health, which I do.
Yes.
I've sort of been trying to figure out like what the role of this show is in my life as I like make all of these COVID era adjustments to my professional responsibilities and schedules and like productivity expectations with myself. And like, I kind of have like slowed down a little bit so that I like can stave off burnout. And then I was really actually remembering, and I wonder if you feel this way about your show. I also do kind of like look to these recordings for a time of just unspooling the things that I'm thinking and feeling about all of my favorite topics. And so I've been really looking forward to just like talking about the shit that we like to talk about.
No, definitely. I always say to people like, the admin stuff around the podcast and the editing is really annoying and I hate doing it, but like the conversations and the research, I never mind. Like that never feels like work. So yeah, it's a good space.
We just need to get set up where like we are treated like what we are, which is the talent.
Yes. I need an intern.
Well, if you are interested in being an intern for Annie Rose, we will let you know where you can get at her. And before we do that, let me read her bio. Annie Rose Malamut is a writer, teaching artist, podcast producer, and self-identified lesbian vampire. We will be coming back to that. As the creator of the podcast Girls, Guts, and Giallo, she examines subversive and controversial films from a femme leather dyke perspective. In her writing, she blends personal narrative and film theory. And up top, will you let people know where people can find you on the internet if they want to follow along online and look at thirst traps of you and like your memes, like yeah, while they listen to you?
Yeah, you can find me on a bunch of places. You can find me on Instagram, like my personal Instagram is fatgawth, fatgawth.
Great handle.
And yeah, I'm stuck with it. I've had it since like 2010. It's not going away. And you can find all of my podcast stuff on Instagram and Twitter at Girls Guts Giallo, and you can listen to it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hell yes. I have been on the show twice now.
It's true. Talking about ugly British men.
Yes, my faves. Why? I don't know. I'll talk to my therapist about it. I am fully talking to my therapist about it. That might actually come up in this podcast because of our topic.
About monsters.
Well, you know, yes. Not to get ahead of myself, but what is a lust for an immortal being if not a mommy or daddy fetish? They're literally hundreds of years older than you.
That's true, yeah.
Or vice versa. So we are going to talk about vampires today. This is a topic that has come up on this show maybe more than you would think, but not if you know me. Yeah, totally. And I just kind of feel like it's an endlessly interesting topic. I mean, we talked about it a few Octobers ago when I had Katie Skelly and Kristen Soleil and Carly from Pleasure Chest on the show. We did like a bunch of sexy monster stuff. And I'm sure I talked about it more when I had Katie Skelly back on. Have you read My Pretty Vampire by Katie Skelly?
I haven't.
Highly recommend. And she just released a new book. I forget their names, but the maids that the Genet play is based on, the maids that like murdered their mistress and probably had like an incestuous
sister, my sister.
Is that also about them?
The incestuous maids? Yeah.
Yeah. Sure, we talked about vampires on the Blood episode with Maxwell Lander.
The Laura Westerngard episode, because she was also on my podcast. So
totally. Yes. Out. Oh my God. You guys talked about Rebecca. Have you seen the trailer for the new Rebecca remake?
Yes.
What do you think?
I don't approve, but I'll watch it anyway.
I'm very, very curious as ever to see whether they will make the subtext text and whether that will be a good or bad thing. Know what I mean?
Right. I definitely think that it should stay subtext, but you know, I'm kind of down on remakes in general, so I'm not the best judge.
Well, you're somebody who is obviously very invested in just watching the first one instead of being like, oh, you gotta like put Armie Hammer in it in order for people to watch it.
And also, Armie Hammer is just not Max de Winter. Like, it's... But whatever.
I mean, I like him, but he's no Olivier.
No.
Let's start here. So you identify as a lesbian vampire. And I feel, actually, you know what other episode this reminds me of a little bit is the cannibalism episode with Empress Wu. Mm. It's important to sort of talk about the difference between, because people can be, I don't know if you've noticed, really literal when it comes to sex.
And obtuse
is totally the word. When Wu and I were talking about cannibalism, like, we were not literally talking about like being turned on by like going on dates with people where we like prepare their legs to be eaten.
That was a great episode, by the way.
Yeah. I cannot believe how popular that episode is. It is the one that back when I would actually run into people in person, when I would talk to people like IRL, the most people would be like, I love that episode. Just like, okay.
It's really good.
This is my project. Wu is brilliant. So I feel like people might see that you identify as a lesbian vampire and think, do you remember? I feel like this was a trope on the like Jerry Springer sort of daytime talk show world of the 90s, where people would be booked on the show and they would be like, I identify as a vampire, and they had like filed their incisors down and like, of course, wore all black.
Yeah, that's one of my roots.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. So, you know, the questions on that would always be like, do you actually consume human blood? Do you wish us harm? Like, so I guess...
Do you wish us harm? Yes.
So the answer to this, right up top, the answer is from you is yes, you wish everyone harm. What does it mean, Annie Rose, to be a lesbian vampire?
I'm sure it means something different to other people who identify that way. But for me, like I said, one of my roots was seeing people like that on talk shows and just being like fascinated and transfixed. And I think for me, there's a few aspects going on. Like, there are the literal aspects of being an attraction to darkness and death and anything kind of morbid. Like, I'm very goth for life. I've been goth since I was like 12 years old, and it's not changing. Like, so there's that part of it, like being attracted to the aesthetic of darkness. Mm. Not just attracted to, but like obsessed. Like, I cannot stop. Like, it is a huge part of my personality.
It's a huge part of your personality to be like obsessed with death and darkness.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. Then there's the other parts of it, which are like, I have always really struggled with being awake in the daytime. I feel most myself when it's dark out.
Mm.
I come like awake when the sun goes down. It's just, mm-hmm. I've always been like that ever since I was a kid. So that is something that, you know, I don't want to overstate harm or whatever, but it is definitely something that has othered me in some ways, just because like the capitalist world that we live in, that's not how it functions.
Oh, that's a really interesting point.
Right. So like you wake up and you're supposed to wake up in the morning and go to your 9 to 5 and then go to sleep at night. And that is just not how my brain works. So it's something.
Would you say you love the nightlife?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, I love how the night is sexy. The night is femme. Like, you know, people feel different when it's dark. You can be more yourself. Like, the weirdos come out. Like, that's when people go cruising. And it's just like a different energy that really resonates with me. And so that is the other part of it.
I love that, by the way. That is such a, that's just very well said and very beautiful and is like making me smile.
Oh, yeah. The night is like, I feel like the night is also a huge part of my sexuality. Like, I can fuck during the day, but it doesn't feel as sexy as it does at night. It makes me feel more awake and alive, the darkness. So there's that part of it. And then the other part of it is this tradition, this filmic and literary tradition of the predatory lesbian.
Ah, yes.
And that manifesting so in so many ways in the figure of the lesbian vampire. So, and that is very much how my sexuality has felt and developed for me. Like, I've always had, like, no amount of mainstreaming or assimilation or pride has shaken this sense of myself as, like, an inverted, dark, predatory sort of figure.
But the important thing is that you're at peace with that and you're, like, into it.
Yes. And I fetishize it. So, but that's also part of it, is like clinging to that sort of that history of subtext. And that was meant to convey a kind of homophobic message, but actually ends up being kind of illicit and sexy.
Oh, I love that. That is so fantastic. So do you drink human blood?
I mean, yes. not non-consensually, though.
Right. That's
and,
the...
Yeah.
That's the difference.
And not very often. Like, that is a special.
That's you don't a special need thing. It to live.
No. Yeah. And it, you know, most of the time, like, when you do blood play, right, you're really not supposed to drink other people's blood. So it's definitely something that is reserved for very, very special people and occasions.
You know, if you were just drinking blood all over town, just slutting it up, then it, you know.
I mean, I kind of wish I could. Like, like I just can't. So.
Well, we'll work on that for you.
Yeah.
So you are such a big film person. You know, it's both your interests and the work that you do. What are some of your favorite depictions of vampires?
Oh, good question. So depictions of vampires in general or specifically lesbian vampires?
Great counter question. This is an omnisexual show, right? This is a show about it all. So, like, I am probably going to force you to talk about, like, old, decrepit white guys and my weird sexual obsession with them, because how can I talk about vampires without talking about that? If you want to talk about, like, any general vampire depictions that you're into, that's great. But if you want to just, like, narrow in on lesbian vampires, I will not stop you.
Well, I can sort of give, like, a history of my favorite representations, because I think I discovered the lesbian vampire a bit later, so my favorite representations of vampires were, you know, quote-unquote male vampires. I don't really think of vampires as, like, having a gender even, but, like...
Totally, and that's something that I talked about with Laura Westergaard, is,
right.
Like, she kind of, like, let me off the, like, queer gothic hook for the queer gothic hook. That's quite a visual, actually, when you think about it. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the idea that, like, all monstrosity is queer. So if you, like, find yourself attracted to a monster that is depicted as a gender other than the primary gender you're attracted to, or all queer lust is monstrous. So,
like, yeah, actually, you're inspiring me. I have, like, so many tangents I want to go on here, but, like, I think of lesbian vampire like as its own gender almost. Like,
yes,
lesbian vampire is definitely my gender and like my gender expression. Like, it's a very deep sort of identity for me. I think a lot of the time people feel like it's like a kind of a campy sort of joke, and it is. Like, I don't want to, you know, take myself too seriously.
Campy joke can also be a part of your conception of your gender.
Exactly. Like,
take it from me.
Yes. I think of the vampire as an omnisexual being, like, part of why I identify with the with the figure of the lesbian vampire is, like, I'm a dyke, like, I really am only interested in dating and am only attracted to women. However, I am also not shy about finding lots of other people attractive and saying it openly. Like, it's not something that I have a hang up about. So I can watch a movie and be like, that guy's hot.
Yeah.
Which is very much, I think, part of the vampiric element. It's like, well, you know, anybody will do in a pinch. Like, it's not, you know, like the lesbian vampire, like, and vampires in general seem to have like genders that they prefer like feeding off of or fucking, but like anyone will do in a pinch, which is like
totally
sort of how I almost I conceptualize my sexuality in some ways, just because like ultimately at the end of the day, gender isn't real.
Totally.
I'm just very, very comfortable with my sexual identity in that way.
That fucking rules. Talking about it in this like sort of allegorical way of talking about monsters that are like part human, part animal, and part demon also kind of just like brings up the reality of the situation, which is that everyone is ultimately just flesh.
Yes, exactly.
When you think about people as flesh, you start to realize that like gender doesn't exist, or in any case is over.
Totally. I mean, I always say like if men were like they were in movies or were like vampires, maybe I would like them. I just don't like the reality of them. So it's like, I feel like that's less a me thing.
Like, no, just, I mean, can relate.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, also with male vampires, like I also am allowed to kind of like live out some of my latent gender queer feelings or whatever. Like one of my early vampire roots is Kiefer Sutherland from The Lost Boys.
Classic. Iconic.
So sexy. And it's almost like I realized later in life, coming into my sexuality, that I didn't necessarily want to fuck him in that movie. I just wanted to be him.
Right. Totally. That makes complete sense.
Right. And like, I still dress like that. Like, I dress like him. I have definitely embodied that and like incorporated that character into my conception of my own gender. Then also Lestat from Interview with the Vampire.
Are we talking Tom Cruise incarnation, or are we talking more about the books?
Well, both, I would say. Yeah. And like, I saw the Tom Cruise incarnation first before I read the book.
I was so obsessed with Kirsten Dunst in that movie. Kirsten Dunst and I are like almost exactly the same age. Already at 13, I felt like hundreds of years old, and that like everyone just like did not understand or appreciate that people would like look at me and like underestimate me, and I'd be like, ugh, you don't even know what I have seen and what I and
what
can
I'm
do.
Capable of.
Exactly. I was right at the age where like Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt were supposed to be the thing for you to be into if you were a girl, and I was like, but can we talk about this baby vampire girl and how much I love her?
Yeah, I mean, that's just, that film is just so the three main characters are so incredible and work so well with each other. And it's also like really fucking sick, like the relationships they have with each other. Like,
it's really sick.
It's really demented, especially it's even more so in the book.
Totally. I can't, it's been a long time, but I definitely remember being like, whoa, when I read the book.
I mean, and then later we get Octavia Butler's book, Fledgling. I don't know if
you've
read that.
Fledgling also. That book has the best literary description of pheromones, how pheromones are primal and kind of like the thing that you were talking about, like both connected to appetite and sustenance, like needing to like eat and consume, like in terms of the fucking food chain, but mm-hmm. like also about sex at the same time. And also how you can like claim someone through pheromones, and that like if you have been claimed by someone and become obsessed with them, what it is just like to live in the world being like, the minute that you catch a sniff of them, nothing else matters.
Right. And also the exploration of power dynamics in relation to age, which is something that gets explored in Interview with the Vampire a little bit. And then, but much more so in Fledgling, because that was Octavia Butler's like specific goal with that book was, you know, she put the soul of a 50-year-old woman in the body of an 11-year-old black child, this vampire who's actually, you know, a middle-aged woman but looks like a child, and yeah. is having sex with and feeding off of white adults. So, you know, it's a very like bold and daring interrogation of sex and power dynamics.
Also great description of the pettiness of jealousy in polyamory and chosen right. family.
Right.
Where like people are all of a sudden like, but I want to be the person that you want to feed off of the most. And
right.
It's like, can relate.
That's the other thing about like the vampire identity, right? Is I'm polyamorous. I've been non-monogamous for a long time. I knew that that's what I wanted ever since I didn't have words for it when I was a kid. And that is also part of the vampire identity for me, is like this idea of having multiple lovers, or like having a coven of people.
Yes, or a nest.
Yes.
You are so fucking funny on the internet, both in your memes and in your like Twitter rants. And there are a few things that you have tweeted that have stuck in my mind forever. And one of them was, monogamy is hard and polyamory is hard, but with one, I get to bang more chicks. And you know what? That's enough for me.
that's, I mean, yes. Like, they're both really hard.
they're both fucking bullshit sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that is absolutely a selling point.
And it's okay that's why. The selling point doesn't have to be that it's easier.
Like, I even hate identifying as polyamorous just because of, like, polyamorous people. Like
100%. I feel the same way about the word pansexual. I'm
oh,
like,
God. Yeah.
I've never been to Burning Man, so.
Yeah, it's, like, polyamorous, like, pansexual. Like, people that ardently use those terms are, like, burners. And it's embarrassing, but it is... You know, the closest polyamorous would be the closest description to what I practice. But I feel
totally.
Like people try to elevate the practice to this place of like divinity almost.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm like, I mean, it's okay to want to do this because you get to fuck more people.
Totally. And I also think that a lot of complications do actually arise as a direct result of people thinking that it makes them holier than thou, or that it's like inherently more ethical, or that it's inherently, you're like inherently going to like get more of what you want from polyamory. And then they encounter conflict and they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Right. It's just all bullshit.
It's just all bullshit, and yet we keep trying.
Yes.
Fledgling, what else?
Obviously, I know you love this movie too, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I do. We have had many conversations about Lucy's ravishment.
Oh, God, yes. Love that scene. And I just love Lucy, and that she's great in that film. But
she's so great.
And then, more specifically, when I got older, I started to get more into lesbian vampires. And I think the first lesbian vampire film I saw was The Hunger, which...
Also... classic.
Huge.
Such a root for so many lesbian
Yeah,
vampires.
Huge formative film for me. Formative in my goth sensibilities as well. And some of my other favorite lesbian vampire films are Daughters of Darkness. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I haven't seen that one.
It's incredible. It just got a 4K restoration.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's a European like art house film. God, is it 1971? I want to say, but it stars Delphine Seyrig, who you might know from Chantal Ackerman's film Jean Dillman.
Oh yes,
yeah. So it stars her and as a resurrected kind of Countess Elizabeth Báthory.
Oh, she's the one that like bathed in virgin blood to yes. stay young, right?
Yes. Yeah. Also, one of my roots.
Heroes, learning about yeah. her.
So yeah, she plays like a Countess Báthory figure who's kind of preying on this young couple at this abandoned European resort, and it's a gorgeous film.
Cool.
Yeah, so those are like kind of the big ones. And you know, there's dozens of these lesbian vampire films like that came out of the glut of exploitation films in the 70s. So
I have a very vivid memory of being probably like 13, probably like Kirsten Dunst in Interview with the Vampire age, and looking through the CD collection of a family member of mine and finding this CD called Vampiros Lesbos.
Yes.
And I was just like, what is this funny feeling that I
what
have?
What is this funny feeling?
And then putting it on, and, you know, I have always loved funk and, like, all different kinds of psychedelic music, even, like, really
same.
Cheesy psych funk, which, if you are in the market for some cheesy psych funk, have I got a record for you.
It's Vampiros
the soundtrack
Lesbos.
To the film Vampiros Lesbos.
It's one of my course, favorite like, soundtracks.
Yeah, I love writing to it. It's a little like kind of spunky at times too. It's like creepy, but then it's like do.
Yeah.
Like, and then there's like moaning sounds in the background.
Jess Franco is Spanish, so.
Yeah, oh, also 71. Great year for lesbian vampires.
Really great year for lesbian vampire films, yeah.
Yeah, and of course this CD had like, you know, its whole, the whole like book where there were many, you know, naked or near naked pictures of sinister lesbian vampires. And I pulled it out of the CD collection and was like, what's this? And then like kind of got made fun of for my curiosity about it, which just then in turn made me mad and felt like, none of you are lesbian vampires. How dare you make fun of me for discovering this relic of my people?
It is a relic of your people.
Much later, I finally like got my hands on a copy of it and watched it. I mean, I think I must have been very stoned when watching it. I don't have a lot. It's not very good, I don't think.
No, rewatch it this season.
Okay, I will.
I mean, like, listen, I am never the person to go to about if one of these movies is good or not, because I have
well,
a very, like, I
enough.
Feel like I have a very different standard. Like, it's definitely a hot piece of garbage, but it's
right.
a really, really fun hot piece of garbage that has some really, really beautiful scenes.
Okay, I'm going to give it another shot.
Yeah, give it a rewatch. There's also a B-plot with a serial killer that's pretty entertaining.
Gotta love that.
Yeah. Well, I love Andrei Cordescu's book, Blood Countess.
Oh, cool.
It's actually quite a political novel, but it's about this man who is distantly related to Countess Elizabeth Báthory.
It all comes back to her.
Right. She is the OG lesbian vampire, and you would like the book. It's really gross.
Who, me?
Yeah. He goes to Hungary, basically, and there's a lot of political intrigue, but the book goes back and forth between his what's happening with him currently and like flashbacks about Elizabeth's life.
Great.
So that's one of my favorite novels. I love the Hammer film, The Vampire Lovers.
Oh, cool.
Which stars Ingrid Pitt as Carmilla, which is another OG lesbian vampire. If you out there in podcast land don't know, this author, Sheridan Le Fanu, I just want to double check the date, because his short story, Carmilla, predates Dracula by, I want to say, 20 years.
Nice.
So, yeah, so it originally comes out in 1872. It predates Dracula by 26 years. because we often think of Dracula as like the OG vampire story, but this came out first.
Oh my God.
It is about a young girl who's kind of like isolated at her father's mansion in the countryside, and one day this carriage breaks down and this young woman, Carmilla, is found alive, and she stays at the mansion, and she turns out to be a lesbian vampire.
Who would have thought?
Right. Who's feeding on this girl in the night, taking the form of a giant cat. So,
of course,
obviously, pussy, come on. And so that's, in lesbian vampire films, like, there's two major archetypes. Countess Elizabeth Báthory is one that inspires a lot of films. And then Carmilla is the other one that you can find, like, endless variations of that story in so many exploitation films.
Amazing. So how would you start answering the question, why are people into vampires? Why are vampires sexy?
Oof. So it's something I've thought about quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise. I'm going to take a little digression because I
Please.
Think, so when I was a little kid, and I feel like I've heard you talk about this, but I could be thinking of another pervert. I used to be obsessed when I was a little kid with the Phantom of the Opera.
First of all, my understanding of the plot of Phantom definitely comes from just like listening to the soundtrack over and over again, which is like most of the story, but like maybe not all of it. And then I definitely saw a production of it in like San Francisco when I was pretty young. And I have read the book, because of course I have.
Right. So I grew up in New York, so I'm a little spoiled baby in some ways and have seen a lot of Broadway shows. And
Yeah, I imagine back in the day, a lot of Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Right, when it wasn't like $200.
Yeah.
I've seen Phantom of the Opera on Broadway 3 times.
Amazing.
Now, you know, I'm like, oh my God, he's such a fucking incel. But when I was...
Oh, totally.
When I was a kid, you know, like, I was so obsessed with that character. And why I'm so obsessed with that character, I think, is because of this, first of all, like, the aesthetic and the darkness and, like, this beautiful, like, deformed, dark genius. And I think the other part of it was, like, this genius figure being so obsessed with you that they need to kidnap you and capture you and like keep you completely for themselves. And like there's something extremely erotic about that.
Totally.
As problematic as it may be.
Isn't that so funny? Let's pause here and talk about this for a second, because like what you are describing right now is sort of my top line explanation for the appeal of rape fantasies and like consensual non-consent fantasies, right? We know that people have rape fantasies, mm-hmm. and project of this show and the project of the work of a lot of other people is like, that's very disturbing. Let's talk about it. And like, let's also talk about how it doesn't mean that you like secretly have a death wish or that you secretly like actually really enjoy living in rape culture. It's like, it's more complicated than that. But like that thing that you're describing, when I have like asked myself that tough question, like, where do my masturbatory rape fantasies come from, or my desire to like do BDSM scenes that involve being taken by force? It totally has to do with this idea of like being like such an incredibly fascinating object of desire, being so beautiful, being so worthy of intense desire that someone would transgress, would actually like do horrible things, including to you, in order to fuck you, in order to experience you, in order to possess you, in order to have you. We keep kind of talking about scenarios of queer desire that are like, well, it all starts with like me being thought of as the hottest thing.
But that's what was appealing to me about it. And like, and it wasn't Christine that I was imagining myself as, it was the Phantom.
Totally.
Like, I was... You know, I was erotically into the idea of somebody being so obsessed with me that they have to kidnap me. But I think mainly I was more into being the kidnapper. And it's so funny. I used to like pretend to be the Phantom, and I would like put this mask on and like,
oh my God,
I would pretend that my cat was Christine and like whisk her away. Like, I was really into it. And that automatically translates to vampires for me, because I think what is so erotic about the vampire to people is like, this person is so into you that they have to like literally consume you and possess you and make you theirs and like bring you into their world. And you have no choice either. Like you are, you are free to completely give up any sort sense of social decorum because this being is controlling you.
You know that this person or this creature definitely wants you because they're doing horrible things in order to get you.
Yes.
Sometimes in this fucked up world where people are bad at communicating, sometimes can I just see through your actions that you want me because you're doing horrible things? If you didn't want me so bad, then you wouldn't do all these horrible things. I am willing to have horrible things done to me in order to feel certain that you are obsessed with me.
Well, it's kind of like how there are submissives that don't particularly enjoy pain or like aren't pain sluts, but do it for their dom.
Totally. It's devotion.
It's devotion. It's hot. Like it's, you know, I'm going to go through this to please you.
Yeah. A test of endurance.
Yeah, exactly. And there is something, yeah, inherently erotic about that. And the idea that somebody would need to be this monster to possess you. We as queer people have become so good at like negotiating and practicing consent and like safety and all of this stuff. And that is all wonderful. But, you know, part of what is erotic about the sexual experience to me is like, it is illicit. It is unmitigated. It is messy. Like it's, and sometimes I feel like in queer community, especially in like queer women community, like we kind of suck the eroticism out of things a little bit by being so forthcoming and like blatant, which it can be hot in its own way.
Well, I mean, like vampires are very blatant.
Yes, I guess that the way it's this idea of things happening like in the shadows, like without your consent.
Totally. And seduction and like the idea of like, does consent culture destroy seduction? It's a yes and thing. I think that you're really onto something, especially in dyke queer culture. There is a carefulness and a concern, which is extremely understandable, of wanting to foreground consent, of wanting to have systems of communication and processing. And that's part of what defines the leather dyke culture that you and I are so a part of. I was going to say like fully realized in.
Enmeshed in, whatever.
Enmeshed in. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That you and I gravitate towards and identify with. We're like trying to have it both ways, or maybe like create like a meaningful tension between the two things. Like we want to care about like justice and consent. And we also want to just be like direct and bold, and the vampire kind of like embodies that duality a little bit, I think, where vampire is just like, once you've like negotiated all the terms, then it's like time to like fucking rip into it literally and like let loose.
You know, and the vampire also like has finesse and like seduction. Yes. And I feel like this is my, I don't know if you can relate, if you agree with this, but one of my biggest gripes with like dating and dyke dating, or like trying to date, and especially right now during COVID, like trying to meet people online and like form a COVID safe practice with them or whatever, like there's so much more negotiation that's happening, but
totally
I feel like there's not a lot of like finesse and seduction in these conversations. Like, I feel like there's an assumed comfort because we're both women, or maybe, you know, the person's not a woman, but like we're both queer. Yeah. And there's an assumed comfort and familiarity that is really unsexy. I don't need to know everything about you in 5 minutes. I don't need to process your parent trauma after a few conversations on Tinder.
Oh my God.
Or just like, yeah, totally, let's hook up. And then they're like, here's my checklist of my kinks and like, what do you want to do? And like, I use gloves. And it's like, okay, can we like maybe just talk about it in person? There's just like a lack of finesse. Like, can you act like you want to try to get me to have sex with you?
It's a paradox, right? And I have to admit, I don't entirely know if I believe that I understand where I stand on, like, what the answer is. And, like, maybe that means that there is not just one answer. And what we...
Yeah, I don't either.
Like,
yeah.
Like, what we really have to do is be comfortable with uncertainty and, like, teach, like, principles of common sense, like, establish, like, what common sense is in sexual communication, as opposed to just, like, all these, like, confusing and contradicting rules and binaries.
Right.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I'm definitely somebody who my whole life has been like, I know what I want. I feel very confident articulating it, asserting it. Here's who I am. Here's what I'm about. What do you think? Like, take it or leave it. And, like, there is something to the, like, primal animalistic or, like, even monstrosity nature where I can relate to that, where it's just like, what I want is very plain. I want to suck your blood.
Right.
Or, like, I want you to fuck me. And that is really appealing. But what you're saying about finesse and seduction and glamoring, glamour is a verb, is also really true. And I wonder if there's, like, something to that analysis. I've definitely also been in the situation where I have, like, been spending time with somebody who I like and am have a mutual attraction with, or even, like, a sexual history with, like, because we're both, like, queer, upfront, sex positive, like, leather folks. And then, like, they'll just kind of, like, show up and be like, cool, so we have sex now? And I'm like, you know, I hate to say this, but if we could hang out for a little while and you could, like, make me feel like you're interested in having sex with me, I will probably want to have sex with you. But if you're just like, here I am, we've had sex before, shall we have sex tonight? It's kind of like, make me feel like you... That doesn't really even, like, make me feel like you want it. And maybe that's fucked up. I'm not sure.
I don't think it's fucked up. I think that it's... Because this is something I've thought about a lot. As, like, somebody who is also very forthright and forthcoming about my desires, but who does have, like, a sense of seduction and finesse.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I'm not letting it be known, like, oh, I want to fuck, I want to do this X, Y, and Z perverted thing. It's that I still care about making the other person want to do that with me.
Like, yeah, and making them feel wanted and exactly. Making them feel, like, special, even if it's, like, just special for tonight.
Exactly. Like, especially being a top, or, like, I identify as a top-leaning switch, but for this purpose is let's my top self... Especially in those scenarios, I'm like, what exactly do you think I'm getting out of this? Like, you just want me to, like, fucking fist you and then, like, go to bed and be like, great. Like, I'm not a trick, you know?
Right.
Like,
you took the words right out of my mouth. You know, that part of what happens in those situations is that it does bring up sometimes, and that this definitely happens you brought up, like, COVID times and online communication. It really brings up for me being, like, interchangeable or just, like, in a revolving door, which, like, if I'm getting paid, that doesn't hurt my feelings.
No, but it's you and I coming from sex work culture, and, like, I haven't been a sex worker for a minute now, but, like, I remember that feeling. Like, it's, you know, I don't want to be treated like a trick. Like, I'm not a man. Like, I don't care that much about having sex with you. So, like, I'm not going to just do anything to have sex with you because, like, you want me to.
Right. And isn't that and that's sad, too, because I think that a lot of people socialized in heteronormative culture think that being desperately begged by an incel is the only path that they know to, like, feeling special and wanted. And that is partially because of narratives like Phantom of the Opera.
Exactly, yeah.
But also most romantic comedies.
I just find the assumed familiarity and the idea that I don't have to be seduced just because I'm topping or because I'm a woman just really unsexy.
Or because you're a slut.
Yes, or because I'm a slut. Exactly, yes.
Yeah, that is fascinating stuff. I want to ask you about immortality because, like, a lot of different creatures are immortal, can be immortal, can be thought of as immortal. And, you know, immortality is an essentially supernatural quality to have, right? Did you watch The Old Guard, or have you read the comic The Old Guard?
I haven't, no. But I know what it is.
I think you'd like it, actually. That is a story where there are characters who they're not gods, they're not vampires, they're not like monsters of any kind. There's actually no explanation for why they're immortal. Like, the only thing that makes them special and the only supernatural element of the story is that they're immortal and they're all like various ages, and it just like seems to happen randomly that sometimes people just don't die, and they're like Wolverine. They can be like hurt endlessly and they will eventually heal, and very gay. Both the comic and the movie are very gay. But yeah, so like just the simple fact of being immortal, living forever, not dying, not aging, being able to heal from mortal wounds, that quality in and of itself has an erotic appeal that I'm really interested in. And like, one thing that comes to mind for me is like, when I think about the idea of being desired by a vampire, like being the object of a vampire's lust, when you think about it, it's really kind of flattering, because it's like, this person has seen some shit.
Oh, hell
like,
yeah.
They've like been through it. They have some perspective, and and they like me.
Yeah.
I guess this kind of goes back to the dynamic of Brad Pitt and Kirsten Dunst's character in Interview with the Vampire. It's kind of like, wow, you've like had a lot of life experience and you fancy me?
Yes.
It's interesting that this vampire conversation is coming back a lot to the idea of like how you can make someone feel special.
I think that is at the core of the fetish in some ways, is like this kind of CNC aspect that goes back to making someone feel extremely wanted and sexy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's it. I think like people also like the vampire the same reason they fetishize older people. Like, you know, it's this wise person, this mentor who can like take you under their wing, and
totally,
yeah, and it makes you feel special and like kind of a muse almost.
Yes. Oh, that's interesting. I mean, it's like I said up top, vampire fetish is a mommy daddy fetish. Like, there's just,
I mean,
just,
yeah,
no way around
as
that.
A vampire mommy, like, it's really like it really goes together. I mean, and my mommy stuff also manifests like in my vampire stuff. Like, there's this book, I don't know if you've read it, called The Monstrous Feminine by Barbara Creed.
I have read that.
Yeah. And there's this part, which it's basically like an analysis of female monsters in film, and there's this part where she talks about the film The Hunger and how the blood letting and the blood feeding is like a proxy for nursing.
Oh yeah.
And that's kind of where my vampire mommy stuff comes from.
Amazing. Yeah, that's what a great, the Hunger is a great like vampire as bisexual.
Oh, totally.
Allegory as well, where
I
it's
mean,
kind of
I
like,
also love that she's a problematic bisexual. Like,
she's such a,
you know what I mean? Bisexual. Like, because bisexual rights, like bi people fight so hard to be like, no, it's not that, you know, it's not that I'm greedy or that like I'm gonna choose a man just because like I'm with a woman because I'm like bored or whatever. And it's like, but she does in this case.
She,
like,
literally does that.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, I had a man for a few hundred years, it's time to have a woman. And I love that. I love problematic bisexuals.
Absolutely. I'm a problematic bisexual myself.
I think I think maybe it is like that sometimes, and that's okay.
Totally.
I'm all about people just admitting that maybe they don't have like the most squeaky clean politics around desire.
Both desire and sexual fantasy and storytelling and entertainment, there's space in all of those places for satire, maximalism, camp, something that is like, whose like pleasures come from undermining a taboo or defanging a taboo or just like reveling in like what you're not supposed to be doing.
Yes, which is why I love the predatory lesbian vampire trope. I'm like, I'm not supposed to like this, but I do.
Yeah.
That's what's exciting to me about it. And I love the deviant queers of horror films. It's where I get so much of my inspiration for my own performance. But about immortality, I wrote actually an essay back in March about the lesbian vampire. And in it, I was talking about being a person who struggles with suicidal ideation and being very attracted to the immortality that the vampire offers, which might seem antithetical to this idea of suicidal ideation. But for me, it's about, listen, what if I didn't have a timeline predicated on like patriarchal standards of like fertility and what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? Like, what if that didn't exist? Like, perhaps I wouldn't want to kill myself. Like,
wow.
And so it's, you know, immortality becomes this like very, this queer thing, like this freedom from a capitalist heteropatriarchal timeline.
Damn. Immortality, also queer. Everything good is queer.
Good is queer, yeah.
I appreciate your willingness to talk about the darkest stuff. And monster stories are often an opportunity for like sort of early philosophical thinking, right? Like, I definitely remember sort of being presented with the idea of vampirism at a young age and sort of thinking to myself, like, what would my reaction be if someone offered me that, you know? Right. And I think that there's a fantasy in that, right? Of like the idea, and different vampire stories handle this in different ways. The most like immediate concentrated fantasy is also like being able to preserve not only your life, but those first, like the honeymoon period, basically, to preserve the period with your new lover or your new partner or your new object of desire, where like everything is just lust and indulgence and pheromones and newness and novelty and sort of losing your fucking mind, right?
Yeah.
Forgetting about the rest of the world. In like regular life, you gotta figure out how to balance that ecosystem. But the fantasy of someone being like, I want to live in this moment forever with you. And like the idea that there would be something supernatural that could make that possible. Because once you've been through it a few times, you know that that feeling is not actually sustainable in real life. The most that you can hope for is a healthy, functional suffusion of it, like into a more like long-term and functional relationship. But that like acute blinders on lust could only be sustainable through supernatural means.
Right, right.
And the idea that someone would be like, you're the one that I want to feel like this with forever. And like, would you make that sacrifice?
Yeah, the Hunger case, it's like, would you feel this way for a few hundred years if it meant you were going to have a horrible fate as a corpse body in a box with consciousness?
Katie Skelly on this podcast talked about how like the appeal of the Hunger for her was just like, she just like wants a crypt like full of her exes that she can like occasionally be like, I'm in a mood. I'm just going to go and like open up this crypt and have my ex be like, oh my God, I miss you so much. And she's like, huh, well, I hope. Okay, goodbye. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go fuck Susan Sarandon now.
Oh my God.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
All right, We got to talk about blood.
Blood.
We had a whole episode about blood. Christine Demonum X obviously talked about blood a lot in the Catholicism episode. There's so much to say about blood play and what is sexy about blood. Something that I feel like weirdly doesn't get talked about enough is how sexy necks are. I like find necks very sexy. I'm just like a switch verse about everything. So I love having my neck touched and like breathed on and kissed and teased really lightly and then also fucking assaulted. And then I also like doing all of those things to other people's necks. And like I have a lot of my like teenage, like early sexual experience memories are like very connected to somebody coming up behind me and breathing on my neck, watching a movie and like somebody like behind you on the couch. I mean, even like necking, right, is obviously,
right,
I don't know, first or second base, like depending on your scale. Like the idea of like necking, okay, this is like a gateway sexual experience. But then I feel like it kind of gets associated with immaturity. Hickeys are associated with immaturity. So just kind of want to talk about blood and necks, because I also feel like I remember a lot of my early sexualization of vampires had to do with the idea of like just wanting someone to like grab me and like fucking tear into my neck.
Totally. And I'm also like such a switch about the neck. Like I want to kiss and bite necks. I want my neck to be kissed and bitten. Like it feels so good. It's very sensitive.
Yeah.
It's an area that doesn't get touched that much. So
right.
It's very charged. I mean, it's just like an immediate erogenous zone. And
it's very vulnerable.
It's very vulnerable. A lot of blood flow there.
Yes. And it's also, it's like the pathway from the sort of like headquarters of the brain, like to the rest of the nervous system, yep. Right? So yeah, it's sort of like cutting something off at the pass.
Yeah. And there is like an immaturity associated with hickeys and biting and stuff. And it's, I'm always like telling people, I'm like, I don't care, go ahead. And then I have to go out in public and I'm like, oh, okay, I have all of these hickeys all over me. And it just brings me back to that like teenage space.
which I love.
Right. Yeah. I mean, listen, if I don't have to go to a job, I don't give a fuck. But and now I don't, so it's great. But
hooray. Oh yeah, quarantine, that's a nice quarantine perk, is that you don't have to hide your sex marks.
You know, especially if you do like rough play and somebody's like, oh my god, what the hell happened to you, and you're like, it was consensual. It's
yeah, I mean, I suppose if you have to do a lot of Zoom calls, you could really start rocking the like neck scarf, and then you don't have to like worry about somebody like doing that dramatic thing where they're like, wait a minute, and they like pull down your neck scarf and they're like, what are these puncture wounds?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, is like the wound, right? Like those two little holes. Like there's also something very sexy about that. I know you talked about this in your episode with Laura, like the idea of like literally creating new holes in someone is very sexual.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, new holes. And also, yeah, and very, very queer. I see that what you're already working with, but what if I just like make
what if you just holes. Had more holes. And I mean, the other
more
thing about
access points,
yeah, the other thing about blood too is just like it's so aesthetically beautiful, and that's
totally
part of what I love about vampire films, is like the loving attention to the blood and the way it looks on someone. Is it's just very beautiful. I mean, it's stark red on any color skin is just very aesthetically pleasing, especially on the neck.
Yeah, something that I feel like I haven't talked about before that's occurring to me now, because something I've learned about on this show in the past year, especially from Lindsay Dye in the cake sitting episode,
is
she's fucking amazing. Like she's done so much deep thinking about wet and messy play and splashing, both with specific regards to the art of cake sitting, but also just like more generally. And containment is associated with order and purity and things being correct, right? So our blood being inside our body, contained within our body, is like things are ordered and controlled and healthy and the way that they should be. And there's obviously lots of very literal things that are accurate and good about that.
Right.
But the fantasy of just of the release, being able to be splattered everywhere, you know, that's what so much of wet and messy play is about, where it's just like the impropriety of like, oh, is this supposed to be like contained in a box? Well, now I've spilled it everywhere. Like, what are you going to do about it? And like reveling in that and sliding around in it. Chaos and disorderliness of blood play is like a really big part of the appeal. And of course, like when a vampire is in, kind of goes into that more like primal animalistic mode, or the sort of more like obscene demonic mode of just like blood being everywhere that it's not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something very erotic about that. And you're right, it can be reflected aesthetically, where you like see an image of someone with like blood dribbling down their face, or like blood all over their crotch, or like blood like dripping out of two puncture wounds in the neck, or just like a room or sheets covered in blood, or a pool of blood, a bathtub of a clawfoot bathtub of blood, a hot tub of blood.
I wish. I mean, I think I think part of also what it is for me, like as someone with a pussy that doesn't visibly ejaculate, blood is also kind of like a visible manifestation of my arousal.
Totally.
Which
totally.
It's like my cum.
Yeah, you can spurt it everywhere.
Exactly. Spurt it everywhere, like drink it from people, like it becomes sort of like a proxy for that for me.
Have you watched the Hannibal TV show?
I've seen some of it. I can't get into it, but
I
like deeply get why people like it.
It's a pretty mask show. I mean, sort of dandy-ish though. At
I
points.
Can get down with a dandy. Like I can do that. I don't like police procedurals where everybody is just like beefed up. I just get bored. But
yeah, Will Graham is a cop. Hannibal's a cop.
Yeah, there's like absolutely no logic of the show, but I'm fine with. I think I just need to, it's hard for me to get into stuff where there's not that many women, but
right. There are more women as the show goes on, I will tell you that. And there are power suits.
Oh, hot. Yeah.
Problematic lesbian.
Hot.
There's like equestrian stuff. You'll get into it. The reason I bring it up is that, for example, there's this one scene where, I won't spoil too much, Hannibal is helping a character fake her own death. He's trained as a surgeon, so he like hooks up this device to the artery of the person whose death he's helping to fake, and he like holds her from behind while she like spurts her blood everywhere.
Ooh.
so that people like, you know, so that they find the blood, and he's also like an expert in like, this is how your blood would spurt if this was happening to you, and so she, and he's like you're watching yourself die right now.
Okay, hot.
Yeah, I knew you would like that.
Yeah.
When I think of ejaculating blood, that's definitely eruptions of blood, that's what I think of.
Yeah, it becomes this very like sexual fluid, spit, sweat, come, and then like we get more kinky and we go to urine and then
yeah,
blood. That's like the ultimate.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, another thing that comes up with blood is something that I've certainly learned a lot of in my more like literary academic studies of gothic horror and vampirism specifically, which is the idea of like disease and infection, mm-hmm. which is something that Empress Wu and I talked about on the live COVID episode for reasons. And I think we talked a little bit with Laura Westengard, because a whole chapter of her book, Gothic Queer Culture, is about bug chasing and queer kinship through disease and both the like horror and beauty of that. There's definitely an element of that to vampirism. Blood sisters or blood brothers, right? Like the idea that as we mingle our blood, the thing in my blood that makes me demonic and gives me this super strength. And I mean, that's something we haven't even talked about with vampires, is that they're really fucking strong, which is really hot, especially if it's like, if you're Catherine Deneuve and you're like very like elegant and even like delicate looking, and then it's like, but also you could fucking eviscerate someone without like breaking a sweat.
Right.
That's hot. In co-mingling your blood, that you would then like infect someone with all of your qualities, and that then you would get to, that you would have an element of sameness to you. I mean, homo means same, right? So, and then of course, like with that infection, you can, that's part of how vampires like build their nests, their covens, their demonically chosen family. You know, you see in a lot of vampire stories that the reverence for the maker, right? That like the person who sired you. There's often a lot of incest with that. People who are sired by the same person often have a sexual relationship, or you have a sexual relationship with the person who made you.
That sort of is part of why the vampire is so inherently queer, right? Is this concept of chosen family. Beyond chosen family, even like leather family, like, you know, you play with each other, but your relationship is more complicated than like a traditional boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever dynamic.
Right. Like sex or even cohabitation doesn't necessarily, like both for vampires and leather queers, like does not necessarily mean like you have a conventional, I was going to say romantic, but like romance can obviously be a part of all of that.
Right.
The thing that you don't have, I guess, is normativity.
Yeah.
Or like prescribed roles.
Right. I mean, it's kind of, this goes back to this idea of like, what would these relationships look like if we didn't have a timeline? They could be there if there wasn't like the relationship escalator, which very much corresponds to a heteropatriarchal idea of how a relationship should go, and like the timeline of a relationship. Like what if we didn't have that? Like perhaps our... Yeah. You know, perhaps more people would be like leather queers, where their relationships were just more fluid, or maybe you're lovers with someone for like 10 years and then you're not anymore and then you are again. If we had all the time in the world, our relationship structures would be totally different.
It's interesting to think about how immortality could, we've kind of already talked about the ways that it makes the possessive part of a relationship feel more immediate. Maybe because you have this like perspective where you're just like, I'm immortal, so if I decide that you are my possession and my plaything, like that's just going to happen right now, and that's a part of my power and allure. But then there is also a little bit of perspective in the sense that you could also then like be someone's possession for like centuries, and then you could be like, cool, let's like go our own way and it's fine.
That's very canon to a lot of vampire literature. I mean, one of my favorite lesbian vampire books is The Gilda Stories by Jewel Gomez. Have you read that?
I haven't. I gotta get on it.
It's about a black woman who is formerly enslaved, and she escapes to a brothel in New Orleans where this white woman and this indigenous woman. The white woman is the madam. The indigenous woman is one of the sex workers, and they are in a lesbian relationship, and they're both vampires, and they turn her, and she lives through the centuries experiencing, I mean, at the core of the story, like it's about love, it's about queerness, and it's also about the way that she experiences racism across the centuries.
I'm in.
It's a really amazing book.
Cool.
Oh yeah, that's a kind of a core part of the book, is that some of these vampires will spend centuries together and then go their separate ways, but they're still in a family. Like years later, I forget the character's name, but the indigenous woman who turned her, like they go their separate ways, and then centuries later they meet again.
Beautiful.
So yeah, it's really beautiful. And their relationships are non-traditional. Like she has traditional romantic relationships with women, but then she also has more fluid relationships with other female vampires and with one male vampire, which is not sexual, but it's like a brother-sister relationship.
Amazing. This seems like a good segue. You wanted to talk about lesbian vampire codependency.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is something I've written about and something I've thought about a lot. You know, we're talking about this idea of like somebody wanting you so much, like they need to possess you. And I think that that's very erotic, but it also breeds a kind of codependency. I see in these lesbian vampire representations the way that these characters will become each other and like mirror each other. And I see that also manifesting in lesbian relationships that I've had, you know, becoming so enmeshed with each other that you're almost like the same person and there isn't that separation anymore. And also just this idea of like one person like metaphorically feeding and draining the energy of another person.
That's an interesting one, like the idea of eroticizing being so useful to someone that you're like actually creating like sustenance for them.
Right.
So that's like the bottom's perspective. And then like from the top's perspective, just experiencing the object of your desire and or love, like being so devoted to you that they're like succumbing to you. They're like giving themselves to you for your sustenance, or like if the like power of the struggle of the like taking by force, the like predator prey element can also just create a lot of really hot tension and energy.
Yeah, a lot of really hot tension and energy, and it can also be like toxic. And I mean, you know, it's never gone great for me when I've pursued relationships where the person was like obsessed with me. Like it felt really good for a few minutes, but then it, you know, it was not. So it's like, it's kind of this idea of like this fantasy, the vampire is almost this fantasy of like making that sustainable.
Exactly. That's what I was saying about immortality. And I totally know what you mean, that feeling when someone is obsessed with you and it just feels so good. And then right. Like, it's very rare to find that level of obsession then giving way into a sustainable good feeling, as opposed to just like turning on a dime into, I don't know, something
hatred.
Else.
Yeah. So, I mean,
right. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. I mean, that's also part of the vampire though, right? It's like this person who's obsessed with you, this thing who's obsessed with you, but is also like destroying you, which is like a very good metaphor for an abusive relationship.
100%. There's another thing that I wanted to ask you about that is not exactly, I don't know if there's a word for this, but okay. So you've mentioned like one thing that you like about vampires is their sort of like seductive finesse. Another quality that vampires have is that for the most part, not always, but they're often like very intelligent, at least compared to other monsters, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of monsters that we associate with a bit more of like creature, primal, animal, even a lot of aliens, right? A story of an interaction with an alien is much more about like humans versus nature than it is about two sentient beings having a conflict, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's some dumbass vampires out there.
But it's not the stereotype.
Even comparing vampires to werewolves, right? Like when a werewolf is in its like monster capacity, it has like even forgotten, usually the werewolf like even like forgets who he is, right? Whereas a vampire, crucially, and this is what I want to talk about, like maintains a sense of who they are, even when they are at their most monstrous, like even when they are like hunting and feeding off on people, their like human element or their sort of sentient demon element is still at the forefront, is still like really present. And there's something really scary and therefore sexy about the idea that like if someone that you know, maybe someone that you love, is transformed into a vampire, it's not like they're then like a brainless zombie that you have to fight that like looks like your mom but is not your mom. Mm-hmm. It's like this person is actually going to maintain the like memories and consciousness and personality of this person that you loved, but then they're also possessed by this like demonic nature.
What it makes me think of is the shadow self that people have that they wish that they could release. And especially when it comes to the erotic, it's like now once you have this permission, you can finally be this person, this being that it is like a purely sexual being, and you also have hyper intelligence and hyper strength. You know, it's like a shadow self, but it's I don't want to think of it as like, oh, your bad self. It's more just like all the heightened qualities mm-hmm. that we consider like super erotic.
You know, a lot of the time when we talk about bottoming, we talk about the idea of like being sort of given permission by your top or by the scenario itself to embody something that you want to embody, but you have a hard time giving yourself permission mm-hmm. to. You can certainly see that in the case of the vampire's prey, the like human that is being like taken and turned by the vampire or whatever. You can definitely see, and we've talked about this already on this episode, that like there's an element to that of the catharsis of surrendering and succumbing to this powerful being, this sexy being, to this nature where you're succumbing to your nature as a bottom and just like giving over to pure sensation, right? Or being useful and being fed on. That's like also true for the vampire predator, that they are giving over to their shadow side.
Yeah.
Like when they become a vampire and like giving into their urges, right?
Right. Well, from like a top perspective, because I mean, I think like obviously the vampire dynamic is very rich for like letting a bottom explore this part of the eroticism. But how many times can I say erotic during this episode? But from a top perspective, you know, I really, as like somebody who is like socialized as a woman and like who lives as a woman in and as a very patriarchal society, I have a lot of hang-ups about being like sexually dominant or sadistic, and the vampire persona allows me to go there
because it's just in your nature.
Yeah, exactly, without feeling guilt about that. Like, I really do think, you know, this is something that I think sex workers are really good at, but I think that gets painted as a negative thing about sex work. Performance can really help people overcome a lot of sexual repression. I think
totally
we're very like hung up on this idea of authenticity and like, is the sex worker enjoying their job? Like, right. Are they enjoying doing these things? And it's like, who is to say that embodying and performing a role isn't in itself a sexual experience that is enjoyable?
Listen, you're singing my song.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm preaching to the choir, but it's...
No, but I'm happy to hear you. I'm happy to hear you say it. I wholeheartedly agree.
I mean, performance has helped me, like, embody so much sexual energy that I would not have been able to without it. Like, I don't just want to be Annie when I'm in these situations. Like, I want to be a heightened version of that. I want to be something more. Like, I don't want to be my everyday self. And then, of course, like, the more I embody the performance and the more it becomes part of my fetish and my sexuality, it kind of leaks over into other parts of my life. But that has been very beneficial for me. Like, being the vampire in these other areas of my life has allowed me to be, like, very assertive and comfortable in my knowledge, like comfortable in my experience. And that figure is just very powerful for me, even beyond sexual play.
I fucking love that. That is so beautiful. It is October. It is the time when we all acknowledge in a whimsical way that we are all going to die. unless someone turns us into a vampire, in which case
the veil is thin.
TBD. Yes, thank you. The veil is thin. I usually do not like holidays or holiday decorations, but I just love walking around and just seeing how comfortable people clearly are when they're given permission. Going back to what you were saying about like being goth and like loving darkness. I find it very life-affirming that people have, like, skeletons in their yard and, like, all of this, like, morbid shit, like, in the true sense of the word.
Yeah,
I know. It's like, yeah, dude.
We're all gonna die. Well, I feel so crazy most of the time. And, I mean, you know, this is, like, such a common, like, goth stereotype of, like, you feel crazy every month except October. Like, I feel so crazy most of the time because, like, my morbidity and, like, my fascination with these things is very playful. Like, it's not it's not morose.
Totally.
Since I was a young child, I like was very scared by the concept of death, and like it used to keep me up at night. I was like, what happens? Like, you're just not existing anymore. You know, like it was so scary to me. And I found over time that by embracing that and making that part of life, it became less scary.
Makes sense to me.
You know, just accepting it and also being playful with it. Like, you know, I always say, like, when I die, like, I don't give a fuck. Somebody can have sex with my corpse. I don't care. Like, somebody should have a good time. I'm very irreverent about it, or I find that much more healing than, like, treating it with an austerity. And that's part of what I love about Halloween, is like everybody is thinking about that, and it is very playful. It's like, what's more playful than like putting a bunch of skeletons in your yard? Like, you are a skeleton. Like, that is inside you, and now you have to think about it, and it's very cheeky, and it's I just love it. There is like a very, you know, a very human visceral response to seeing a dead body. Like, there is something primal within us where we're repelled by it because, you know, we're supposed to avoid it. Mm. I find that I'm not freaked out by most things that people are freaked out by. And like, for example, dead bodies. And having a complex about that and getting made fun of for that, or being made to feel like there's something wrong with me for that, being able to reclaim it in this very like playful and seductive figure of the vampire is very powerful.
I love it. So on the note of Halloween, what are some of your other favorite sexy monsters?
Oh, good question. I mean, I do love the alien from Alien. I want her to impregnate me. She's...
Are you going to be like Brad Dourif in Alien Resurrection, where you're like in the nest, you're like a part of the nest, you're like, this is all I've ever wanted.
Yes, I want the xenomorph.
Speaking of like your life force being sustenance for a terrifying creature.
Yeah, I mean, she's just so powerful, and I find the xenomorph very sexy.
Yeah, man. I mean, you've got the phallus in the... in the vagina with the teeth.
I know. Like, I mean, come on. You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
like, it makes me want to get one of those ovipositive dildos.
Oh, totally. I mean, I see that for you.
Yeah. I see it for me too. What other sexy monsters? I mean, like, I think werewolves can be really sexy.
Yeah.
There, I think about that movie. Have you seen that movie, Trick or Treat?
I haven't.
It's really good. It came out like maybe 10 years ago, but I highly recommend watching it this season. There's a very sexy werewolf scene with Anna Paquin.
Oh, I vaguely remember this.
Yeah. I think I have a thing for tentacle porn.
Okay. Yeah. You're not alone.
No, I'm very much not alone, but it's definitely not like my go-to, but when I see a monster with lots of tentacles, it's definitely something I'm thinking about.
Amazing. So many arms to hold you.
It's so many. Oh, and also like evil computers. Like,
oh.
Yeah. Have you seen that movie Demon Seed?
No.
This is another great movie you should watch from the 70s, starring Julie Christie.
Oh, and, love Julie Christie.
Yes, and her boyfriend builds this supercomputer that controls their house. It's very scary, but like the computer like kidnaps her and rapes her. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was like, in COVID times, I've been like fetishizing this machine fucking me because... And I think I finally convinced my roommates, because I made them watch this movie and they were like, I'm not getting it. I'm not getting the machine thing. And I was like, okay, but think about it. Like, the machine has no reason to be fucking you except like to play with you for its own like intellectual amusement. It's not getting anything from it except that. And that's like very erotic to me.
Well, you know, you've really hit on one of my favorite questions that I like to ask my guests whenever it comes up or I get the chance, which is under what circumstances would you fuck a robot? What Chingy answered this by talking about, I feel like you'll appreciate this. There's a Disney movie called Smart House, I think it's called. The family like doesn't have a mom, and so their house is like their mom.
I think, and that's the blah, yeah.
And Chingy was like, well, I just obviously want this mommy house. I just want to fuck the whole damn house.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I felt about Demon Seed. Like, it's like a very terrifying concept, but this idea, it's again the idea that like something would want you so much that it would trap you and just play with you just for its own amusement. And, you know, it has endless stamina. And
yes, that's a good like, point.
It's just like all about you, and but also not about you. It's very like something about that tension is like sexy to me.
How is this particular computer that you're talking about embodied?
So it's the whole house. So, but it also has these like robot arms.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
A whole house, but with robot arms. So you just so you know, you are not the first person on this podcast to want to fuck a house.
I'm so happy about that. Yeah,
sentient house.
The computer like uses tools and like speculums to examine her.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
It's really terrifying, but like it's also hot.
It's so hot.
Watch it. It's free on Tubi.
Okay, I'm gonna check out Demon Seed. Well, it has been such a pleasure having you on Why Are People Into That. Will you tell folks again, like, both where they can find you and like plug anything going on that you want people to know about, like your Patreon, which is popping off,
yeah,
all the time.
You can find me on Instagram at my personal account at fatgawth, FatGawth, and you can find my podcast on Instagram and Twitter, Girls Guts Giallo, wherever you listen to podcasts. And I also have a Patreon for it, which is patreon.com/girlsgutsgiallo. And I have a lot of really cool bonus content there, like bonus episodes. I have a newsletter. But my favorite thing is that twice a month I go on live and I screen and discuss a hard-to-find rare film that I've usually torrented. I'm a strong piracy advocate. So for the preservation of film, because otherwise you wouldn't see a lot of these things. So true. Yeah. So head on over to patreon.com/girlsgutsgiallo. We're watching this month. I don't know when this episode is coming out, but this month we're doing Mexican cult horror films. And
yes,
we are watching Alucarda tomorrow night, which is a lesbian vampire film.
Perfect note to end on. Annie Rose, you are very funny. And I hope that you appreciate what I'm saying when I say this, but like very mean, like online, you're just like, you're in a way that I just love. It's like very refreshing. You really like cleanse my timeline with your,
I am such a cunt.
It's like what I just need. I need that right now.
I mean, it's so funny because I was like talking to my date about this today, where we were both talking about how people like our whole lives have thought we were like mean and intimidating, and she was like, but you're such a sweetheart. And I was like, yeah, to like you and like my friends, but I'm really not nice to strangers.
they don't deserve it.
They don't deserve it. Yeah, and I'm like massive cunt on the internet. But, you know, I'm glad that you appreciate it.
I really, really do. I said to someone the other day that when I think of the moments of 2020 that I felt relatively healthy and at peace and hopeful, every moment that I can evoke when I like try to remember how that feels is like when I went for goddamn walk. I have a very vivid memory that I will probably will always be very vivid because of trauma.
Yeah.
Of walking around just the vastness of my neighborhood in Brooklyn, just like walking into industrial parts and like past the water, just like further than I had ever gone because it was like the only fucking thing that, you know, with a mask on, like anything that I could fucking do to not feel trapped in my house or by the world. And I listened to so much girl's guts and jallow while doing it, because it was like, I find it so soothing. Like, whether I'd seen the movies or not, I find film summaries very soothing. Like,
me
I will,
too.
Like, read plot summaries on Wikipedia to, like, reset sometimes. But, like, hearing you and your, like, dulcet tones recap a movie and, like, then just, like, really get into both the raunchiness and the brazenness and the obscenity and, like, the grossness and, like, you have the best guests and your show is so much like this show where it's, like, let's just fucking talk.
Yes, definitely a sister show.
Yeah, not to get too into it, but there are other movie podcasts that I love where I just kind of have to like take them with a grain of salt because they have a very bro
totally
point of view, which is like fine, but then it's like really refreshing to then like switch over to yours and be like, oh, we like share this queer leather dyke perspective that is something that you're bringing to one of my favorite things, which is fucked up movies. So
well, that means a lot to me because that's part of why I started it, because I was either getting like bro stuff, which is whatever, or like kind of maybe queer feminist stuff that was like way too preoccupied with like why everything is problematic or like does this pass the Bechdel test, and I was like, where is the fun, where is the beauty, like where is the grossness and the
and like
perversion?
The like revelry in the appreciation of that we like this because it's so fucked.
Exactly, yeah. So and that is what I feel like leather people uniquely bring to things, and why I started it, and it means a lot to hear you say that, and also that you appreciate that I'm mean.
It's real.
I mean, that's like also like even to bring it back to the vampire thing, that's like also part of it is I'm a mean, scary bitch, and embracing the vampire has allowed me to celebrate that part of myself and not try to be something that I'm not.
I totally agree with that. And I got all the way to the end of this podcast without bringing up Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But now
Root.
I'm gonna on the topic of vampires giving you permission to like sort of embodying a vampire personality in order to be like to give yourself permission to like admit what is actually true. Spike quote that has really stuck with me through the years that I really try to invoke when I like need this particular strength is this moment where someone's like, maybe you can fight this monster, and he's like, oh, I could, but I'm paralyzed by not caring very much.
Yes, that is me in a nutshell. Like,
I feel like I need more of that when I'm like overthinking or overprocessing something. I feel like, you know what, I just need to like care a little less, and that actually might be good for me.
I just, you know what it is, like why I think why I'm such a bitch is like I just really don't care that much. Like I really, especially on the internet, I'm like, but I don't fucking know you people, you're not paying me. Like like how dare you, how dare you presume to infringe on my precious time, like who are you again? So it's very I don't owe anybody anything, and it's I mean, I think that's why I have to put that forth so much, because it doesn't matter, I'm gonna get bothered anyway.
That
so I might as well like mitigate that as much as possible.
It's been so nice catching up, and I hope that you stay well and comfortable, and I'll talk to you soon.
I'll talk to you soon. This was great. Bye, Tina.
So great. Bye, Annie Rose.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.